Main menu.
Main menu.
Main menu.
Main menu.
A very warm welcome to ACB Radio Mainstream's Main Menu, a regular look at technology from a blindness perspective. First heard on ACB Radio Mainstream every Wednesday at 1 Universal and during the US winter, that's 8 p.m. on a Tuesday evening Eastern Time, that's 5 Pacific. This week we present the first of a two-part interview with Stephen Baum of Kurzweil Educational Systems. A few days ago, ACB Radio learned of the untimely demise of John Madioli, a contributor to Main Menu, known for his series on Windows 2000, and also his look at Quicken, the financial and accounting package. During the course of my interview with Stephen Baum of Kurzweil Educational Systems, I asked Steve to say a few words about John Madioli.
Sure. I'd actually like to start by reading his obituary in the Boston Globe, which just came out today, and which covered a major portion of the obituary column. It was not a small article, and I thought it was very nicely written. It was written by Emma Stickold, a Globe correspondent, and dated November 8th. John R. Madioli, Jr. wanted computer software to be accessible to all, especially to the vision impaired. For more than a decade, the Arlington resident worked hard to make it easier for impaired users of such programs as Microsoft Windows and more intricate applications. The Stamford, Connecticut native died Wednesday at his home of cancer. He was 40. As a senior software engineer at Kurzweil Educational Systems in Bedford, Mr. Madioli worked with various companies to ensure that they made provisions for users who, like himself, had lost their vision. On internet chat boards, Mr. Madioli's messages helped to calm those with pressing questions about how to navigate through complicated software problems. After earning his bachelor's degree from Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute in Troy, New York, in the early 1980s, Mr. Madioli worked as an engineer in various Connecticut-based companies. He moved to Arlington 4 years ago to work for Kurzweil. "He was a giant to me," his father, John, of Stamford, Connecticut, said yesterday. In addition to his father, Mr. Madioli leaves his wife, Lori A. Doyle, a son, John III, his mother, Angelina, of Stamford, two sisters, Lynn Forrest of Stamford, and Susan Higgins of Mahopuc, New York, and a brother, Mark, of Milford, Connecticut. Funeral services were held Saturday in Stamford. So I knew John, but not terribly well, before he came to Kurzweil Educational Systems. I would see him at an occasional ACB conference. He was extremely active in VidPi, and I was an occasional presenter with VidPi. At one point, he was the president of that organization, which visually impaired data processing into, I'm not entirely sure exactly.
Yeah, it's the visually impaired data processors international, I think. But I believe they've changed their name now to Blind Information Technology Specialist, BITS. So people may know them as either name, but do go on.
So John at one point was president of that organization, and he called me from Connecticut because he was looking for work in the Boston area. As I'm sure many people can sympathize with, he was actually very happy with his job at that point. He was working for Pitney Bowes. And one thing I think that was important to him and worth noting, a lot of blind people, even highly skilled blind specialists or blind engineers do end up working in the adaptive technology field, often by choice, but some people end up feeling that they're working in that field not by choice, but because that's the field that would accept them as workers. I think that's, I would hope in general that's not true. I know sometimes it is true, but I will say John had made it. John was someone who was an engineer in the general, generic sense of the word, and the fact that he was blind as an engineer was not the reason he was hired, and it was not part of the issue for the various companies that he worked at. He was at Digital Equipment Corporation for quite a while. He was at Pitney Bowes, and the work he was doing there may occasionally have had something to do with accessibility, because that clearly was something that he could be an expert at. But it had to do with other areas of expertise as well. He was doing all sorts of interesting things at that job. However, where he was in Connecticut was close to Pitney Bowes, but not close to anything else, and public transportation in that area was really pretty poor. His wife is visually impaired as well, and really it was just a matter of he wanted to be in a place where they could actually go to a movie once in a while, or where they could go to a restaurant. Boston area, which is an area he had known well in a previous job, was one that was simply better for him in terms of public transportation. As it turned out, after looking at a number of opportunities, we were lucky enough that he joined us at Kurzweil Educational Systems, and he worked both on the Kurzweil 1000 and on the Kurzweil 3000. He also worked on infrastructure behind the scenes at this company. So, for example, the registration procedure that is used as a way basically to let us be a little closer to our customer base is something that he wrote the background stuff for. So he wrote both the transport layer, the client, and also the server application. He did all the database work for that, all those sorts of things he did. And he did that both for the blindness product and for the Kurzweil 3000. He also spent a good deal of his time working on the on the Kurzweil 1000's ability to send documents to other devices. So our connectability to devices like book, Braille Note, Bookport, Book Courier, Packmate, all that was done by him and involved a considerable amount of really very difficult work. He was an excellent engineer. He was an excellent spokesman for his community. There was one time when I was invited to be a part of a adaptive technology conference that Microsoft was sponsoring. And I hadn't actually, I think, checked with John before I went there, but I flew out to Washington, and a day later I was confronted with a group of experts in adaptive technology who were going to tell us about, you know, everything that was right and wrong with Microsoft software and possibly with our own software. And it was one of the people on the other side of the fence was John Mattioli. So that was kind of fun. But it turns out he was very, very active in all sorts of ways representing the blindness community. He was a great guy. He was easy to be around. He had a terrific, somewhat sarcastic sense of humor, and we will all miss him very much.
He certainly, in the material that he's produced for ACB Radio and the presentations that I've heard John give, he certainly came across in that way, as you say, very, very easygoing, very relaxed, and slightly sarcastic. And I think one of the things on the technology front that it certainly impressed me was that I understand that that John was a beta tester for Microsoft, and you know, we all have fun with our screen readers and operating systems when everything's supposed to be working perfectly, but to use an alpha or a beta version of an operating system just I think you've got to be slightly I think you've got to be slightly crazy, a word I can use. Certainly a lot of courage there, and to be able to do that in a way that, that is valuable to Microsoft, and to feedback accurate bug reports, and to, you know, understand the importance of being able to replicate problems during the testing process. And I remember being, you know, terribly impressed by the work that John had done in that area, and I guess he's an inspiration to us all. And you know, when you're sitting there and you're thinking, well, how do I get the computer to do this, and how does this work, and how does that work? You know, there you had somebody of the talent of John Mattioli, who you know, quite frankly, was really at the cutting edge. I don't think I'd dream of beta testing an operating system.
Well, an operating system, but also all of the different development tools. So the later versions of Microsoft Visual Studio were things that John tended to be working on at home, often beta copies, often well ahead of us, in part because their accessibility was absolutely critical to his career. It was extremely important to him that the tools that Microsoft and that others develop, that engineers are going to use, be as accessible to him as possible. And that's no easy thing when the major tool set in the country uses visual as their second word in their title. And they mean it. They're extremely visual tools. And as unfortunately with a lot of things, access to people who cannot see is more often an afterthought than something that's actually baked into these applications. And it takes a lot of time and effort and support from people like John, as well as a lot of political pressure to make those things change.
Yeah, I think for many people, John's up there with the likes of David Costashian, who again had an untimely death a few years ago. David Costashian, the guy who was really the leading light at Synthevoice and developed Windows Bridge, the first Windows screen reader. And I think that while John's work it perhaps wasn't as public, the difference that he made behind the scenes, as you mentioned there, that he worked on the connectivity between Kurzweil and other devices and things that, you know, quite frankly, you take for granted. It just works. And if it wasn't for somebody like John, then where would we be? Well, we certainly send our respects and condolences to John's family, and I'm sure you'd join with me in that, Steve. I'm Dave Williams, and you're listening to ACB Radio Mainstream's Main Menu, a weekly look at technology from a blindness perspective. This week, I'm joined by Stephen Baum of Kurzweil Educational Systems, the makers of the famous Kurzweil software, which allows a blind person to take a standard piece of text, put it onto their scanner, and have a computer read it back to them. Now, OCR software is these days, I think it's probably fair to say, Steve, fairly common now. You can go into a high street store and you can pick up mainstream package, and in fact most scanners now come supplied with some kind of mainstream OCR software. So let's talk about Kurzweil, and why do you think a blind person might want to consider a specialist piece of software like Kurzweil, which let's face it, does cost significantly more than a mainstream package. Why would that be your recommendation?
I don't think it would always be my recommendation. In general, if a blind person is just getting involved in technology, certainly his first purchase is going to have to be a screen reader. A screen reader is a considerably more important piece of technology than is character recognition, or certainly our kind of character recognition. I would add that whether or not they choose to buy a product like the Kurzweil 1000 depends to a certain extent on just how involved they are or want to be with printed text. If they get most of their news from the television or from the radio, if they get most of their access to books from or text from online or from various other sources, then in fact they may do very well with just a scanner and commercial OCR software, which, as you say, is considerably less expensive. What software from a company like mine has going for it basically is three things. One is that it's going to have a feature set that is designed for a person who cannot see the screen. It, as a consequence, is going to be considerably easier to use, but it's also going to have some features that make sense and are in there because we were considering exactly what a blind person might want in a product like this. And those features, as I'm sure we'll hear, really go a long way beyond simply scanning and recognizing text. Finally, I would say that the third thing is dramatically better customer support. For those people who are in the United States, customer support for Kurzweil 1000 is a toll-free call, and that there are people online who know the product in depth, who are blind themselves, and are there from 9 a.m. until 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. In England, of course, it's a little different, but there too, I think the customer support through Sight and Sound is really very, very good.
Okay, we'll come on to talk about specific contact details for customer support, etc., a little bit later on. But Stephen, wondering, can you tell us a little bit about the history of Kurzweil? Tell us something about Raymond Kurzweil and his vision. He clearly has been a visionary in the field of assistive technology, and then perhaps go on to tell us Kurzweil was once owned by Lernout and Horsby. Is that right?
It was indeed, and it's a long and kind of tangled history. One of the interesting things about the various companies that Raymond Kurzweil has founded is that the companies may well have gone through several changes. They may have changed their names and ownership a number of times. The technologies that those companies created are all still pretty much with us. And that's really kind of impressive considering how far back this record goes. Kurzweil Computer Products was Ray's first company. I believe it was founded in 74 or 75. I'm not entirely sure which year. And I always find it remarkable to look back at what the technology was like then and just how audacious the thing he was attempting to do. Because he was working on OmniFont optical character recognition at a time when computers were extremely rare, extremely expensive, and very, very slow, and at a time when there were no scanners. The first CCD-based scanner was designed at Kurzweil Computer Products, one of the first text-to-speech software or synthesis was done at Kurzweil Computer Products. The first OmniFont OCR was done at Kurzweil Computer Products, and all of this was a startup company that had a little bit of government funding, but not a whole lot else, and was there in part because Ray had already demonstrated to his own satisfaction that OmniFont optical character recognition was possible, was an exciting topic, and was something he wanted to spend more time doing. So that was Kurzweil Computer Products, and they showed a reading machine for the blind in, I think, 1977 or 1978. It was shown on national television in the United States, and it was the first time Walter Cronkite, whose famous sign-off was something like, and that's the way it was on such and such a date. That day he did not speak that sign-off. It was spoken by a reading machine. And so reading machine technology got a very early start, and it was really a pretty exciting place to be. I started there in 1982, about 3 or 4 months after the Kurzweil Computer Products had been acquired by Xerox. So Xerox bought the company largely because they were extremely interested in what, even then, 5 years later, was still a very exciting and new technology. They, of course, were a copier company, but they were extremely interested in computer technology in general, and particularly computer technology that could play a part in being a bridge between paper and the electronic computer, the electronic world. So they found that a very interesting technology, and Kurzweil Computer Products at the time consisted of, I think there were about 80 people, and we were in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and some of us were working on the commercial side of the house, doing commercial character recognition, and others were working on the what was called the adaptive side of the house, working on a reading machine for the blind. That reading machine for the blind went, at the time I had started there, I believe the second generation of technology was out, the third generation of technology was coming very shortly, and I was there through the fourth, fifth, and I guess sixth generations of those technologies. When I started there, I was working primarily on the commercial side of the house, but I moved over to the adaptive side and was involved in a little bit in the Kurzweil personal reader, not too much, but a fair amount in the Kurzweil Reading Edge and also Reading Advantage. Reading Advantage was the first PC-based software-only character recognition for the blind that Kurzweil Computer Products had attempted. Now, it gets a little complicated. The name change from Kurzweil Computer Products to Xerox Imaging Systems at some point in the late 80s, I think, and yet the company still had the same mission and did pretty much the same things. And I will say that Xerox, for the most part, was a very good steward of the technology. In general, they allowed Kurzweil Computer Products to do what Kurzweil Computer Products wanted to do. They did not get in our way terribly much, and they helped pay the bills when the bills needed to be paid. They were also extremely supportive of blindness technology, so all that really worked out for them very, very well. Things began to change eventually, and I will have some of these dates wrong because I no longer really sort of focus on this kind of stuff, but eventually the focus became more and more on the commercial side of the house, and some of us who were working on adaptive technology felt that we basically just weren't being paid attention to. After we had introduced Reading Edge and Reading Advantage, we very much wanted to work on the next generation of the Reading Edge. We wanted to make it twice as fast, more powerful, and possibly a little cheaper. And basically, that wasn't something that interested the people at Xerox Imaging Systems anymore. Eventually, we sort of got the message, and one by one, people went off to other companies. And after about 3 years, in 1996 or 97, the various refugees from the adaptive side of Xerox Imaging Systems got back together, and we started a new company with very much with Ray's help. That company was Kurzweil Educational Systems. As should be clear from the name, there were really two intentions with Kurzweil Educational Systems. One was that we intended to go back into the blindness reading machine marketplace, largely because we thought the market was pretty stagnant. At that time, Xerox was still a player in that market, and the other player was Arkenstone. We felt very highly about Arkenstone, their management, their focus, and their technology. We didn't feel the same way anymore about Xerox. We felt we could pretty quickly put them out of business if we came out with a reasonable competitor. The other intent, though, was that we would use similar technology to make a product that would assist people who could see but couldn't necessarily read or couldn't read very well, and that product would be in the educational marketplace. We had experimented with that kind of product at Xerox Imaging Systems. It was called Bookwise. But we thought the time was getting ripe for another attempt at a product like that, which ultimately became the Kurzweil 3000. Very quickly in the history, we started out again in 96. We came out within a very short period of time with the first version of a blindness product, which then was called Omni 1000. And that went through several iterations, eventually becoming renamed Kurzweil 1000 because, oddly enough, the owner of OmniPage complained loudly enough that we decided to change our name. Eventually, as you said, we were bought by Learnout and Housby, and therein ends up being a second sort of difficult but interesting part of our history. At Learnout and Housby, we had great access to important technology. Some really good experimentation was being done in speech recognition. We had access to, at the time, what was the best text-to-speech in the world, which, from our perspective, which was RealSpeak. And again, we were pretty much allowed to run our own company. On the other hand, as many people now know, but which was sort of news to us, Learnout and Housby was sort of, the joke is, it's the Dutch translation for the word Enron. It was a company that was faced with a terrible accounting scandal, had all sorts of really, really serious problems, and we spent almost a year as a management group attempting to buy ourselves out. We succeeded buying ourselves out days before the rest of Learnout and Housby was liquidated. An interesting sort of side story is that the person who, the company that bought most of Learnout and Housby's technology was ScanSoft. ScanSoft was the renamed and reemerged version of Xerox Imaging Systems. So, oddly enough, the people who originally owned one of the Kurzweil companies acquired what's the remainder of Learnout and Housby, and in fact is an important supplier today of some of the technologies that we use. That's about it. We bought ourselves back out. We have some outside ownership. There is a not exactly venture capital, sort of a cross between angels and venture capitalists who have invested in our company. We also have a number of vendors who are investors in the company, and of course some of the employees also are owners of this. We've been out for 2.5 years and are quite happy with that state of affairs.
That's quite an incredible story, Steve. There you have it, folks, a potted history of Kurzweil. I'm interested in Ray Kurzweil. What role does he have now in the newly emerged Kurzweil educational systems? Does Ray get involved in the day-to-day development? Clearly, he's a man that has a lot of interest in the development of not just assistive technology, but he has interests in artificial intelligence, and anyone who searches for Ray online will find all kinds of things that Ray has done. He seems to have his fingers in so many different projects at any given time. Is Ray involved in the day-to-day development of Kurzweil, or does he pretty much set these things up and let you guys get on with it?
Ray is Chairman Emeritus of Kurzweil Educational Systems. He is also a technical advisor. He runs periodic technical review meetings, which is basically an opportunity for those of us who are involved in the technology side of things here to speak with him and spend a day with him regarding what we're doing and what directions we think we ought to be going in. And he then provides his own take in terms of where we are and possibly where we should go as well. You mentioned, indeed, Ray is involved in a lot of different things. He's a very busy guy. He has a company called Kurzweil Technologies, which is almost sort of a holding company of other smaller companies that are doing all sorts of interesting things. Ray also just published a new book called, I believe it's called Fantastic Voyage, which is actually a book about how to live longer. It is, in terms of both exercise, in terms of supplements, in terms of diet. He's had an interest in diet before and continues to have that interest as well. So he is certainly involved in Kurzweil Educational Systems. I see him at every board meeting. I see him at technology review meetings. But no, he is not a day-to-day player.
Okay. We've talked about the history and we've talked some about Ray. Let's talk about the products themselves. Can you differentiate for us the difference between the Kurzweil 1000 and 3000 series of products?
Sure. Kurzweil 1000 and 3000 are very similar in that they both use text-to-speech and they both use character recognition. They both have image processing components. They both involve scanning. Where they differ really is they differ based on who the audience for the products are. In general, I am assuming as I design the Kurzweil 1000 that my customer is either blind or severely low vision. And for the most part, the features I implement are features that you can use if you are blind. There's a few exceptions, obviously. You can display the image of the page on the screen, and there are some, you know, various low vision features that are in there. But primarily, I'm thinking in terms of people who are profoundly blind. That, of course, clearly is going to influence the user interface. It's going to influence other things as well. The Kurzweil 3000 is designed for people who can see, and generally is thought for people who can see normally. It turns out just to be basically good citizens in this community, we do want the product to be accessible to the blind to the extent we can make it accessible. And so it supports the various standards that help one do that. And in fact, you can turn on features that have it speak the user interface aloud if you would prefer to do that. But in general, it is a product that's designed for someone who can see the screen. It's a very colorful display. There are toolbars all over the place. There's all sorts of functionality that is rather mouse-oriented. And the audience, for the most part, is someone who can see but cannot read, generally dyslexic, sometimes ADHD. It turns out that people who are have various types of attention deficits often cannot read for any length of time, but can listen and follow a display on the screen for a longer time than they could actually just reading. It turns out that having more than one mode of sensory input at once is a really good thing for certain types of people. Being that it is a product that's sold in schools primarily, it also has a much stronger focus on study skills and on collaboration. There's a network version of the product, of the Kurzweil 3000, that makes sense in the kind of environment it's sold in. Having said that, I don't want to make it seem that the 1000 has no education features. Since I'm at a company that tends to focus largely on education, there's a lot of things that are study skills oriented about the Kurzweil 1000, about ways in which people can preview what they're going to read, actively read what they're reading, taking notes, use those notes to write documents, use those notes to review in advance of a test. So there are certainly study skills features in the 1000, but again, the main difference is that the 1000 is primarily designed for the blind. Now, I'll say one thing about the 3000, which is that if you are a low vision user, although I think the 3000 is a little clumsy now and then for low vision users, I don't think it's ideal. It does give you the ability to scan a form, see that form on the screen, automatically indicate or automatically have the system figure out where to let you type, have you type, allow you to additionally create new fields that you might want to enter, and then print the form. So that it does give for a low vision customer the ability to do some degree of form identification. We have not added that into the Kurzweil 1000 for the simple reason that form recognition and identification just isn't good enough for a profoundly blind user. And so although we could expand the product to do some things for our low vision customers. We haven't done so because we're a little concerned about the number of profoundly blind customers who would desperately want to get that to work and would find it's not really quite good enough.
I'm Dave Williams. You're listening to ACB Radio's Main Menu, a weekly look at technology from a blindness perspective. We're in conversation with Stephen Baum of Kurzweil Educational Systems. Steve, it's been a while since we've looked at Kurzweil on Main Menu. So let's talk about the version 8 release, which many version 8 users seem to think it's a good release. And could you just talk us through some of the highlights there? What were the new features? So I've got a couple here from the release notes, but there may be particular ones which you want to draw emphasis to.
Okay, I'm bringing up a document that has them because I tend to lose track myself time after time. But version 8 was released about a year and 4 months ago, and things that were new with it. Let's see. One is a new speech engine. That was we released Neo Speech's voice text, which has two high quality voices, one a female voice and the other a male voice. The female voice is Kate. The male voice is Paul. They're very, very high audio quality. So much so that they tend to require a fairly powerful computer and they take a lot of disk space. And we found them to be pretty popular in general. If we're playing those voices at a show, people who haven't heard them tend to stop, come by the booth, want to listen to the voice for some period of time because it's markedly better than other voices that have been on the market. Unfortunately, it's only available in American English. There is no British English equivalent, nor do they have voices in other languages. And so there are some limitations. For us, one reason we switched to voice text had a lot to do with the dramatically better quality, but also due to the fact that it was the first high-quality male voice that we had found. Another thing we liked about it a lot is it's much more customizable than most high-quality concatenative voices. It's the only one I know of where you can control the pitch of the voice, and that's very handy because people have different notions and different preferences as to what the pitch should be. Version 8 introduced color scanning. It was our first release with color scanning, although it's hardly a new feature for other people. But it gave us the ability to scan, display, and magnify and print in color. And being able to do that for our low vision audience was, in particular, was important. The side effect, of course, is that color scanning can be pretty slow, and that it's a little difficult to predict sometimes the effect of scanning in color on recognition quality. Usually it's very good. Sometimes it's better than if you scan in black and white. Sometimes it's worse. But in general, there's somewhat less control when you're in color for optimizing various features for scanning. And speaking of optimization, one of really the most exciting features in version 8 was the ability to optimize your scan. As I'm sure you know, there are lots of variation in the quality of the kinds of materials people want to scan. And there's also a lot of settings that people can control in order to improve recognition. And those settings include thresholding, brightness, resolution, speckle removal, text quality, and in the Kurzweil 1000, the choice of which recognition engine you want to use. It can be very difficult to learn how those different settings affect recognition, and of course it's harder still when you can't see the page that you're trying to scan. So one thing we added in version 8 was scan optimization. This feature basically lets you take a representative page, a page that's going to be, you think is pretty similar or pretty representative of the kind of thing you are going to be scanning for, say, an hour or so, put it on the scanner and use scan optimization, which will scan the page again and again, maybe as many as 10 or 15 times, each time changing some of the settings and recognizing the page and then automatically determining which page had the best recognition. And based on that, it ends up picking settings for you. And I will caution people that it is not perfect. First off, the computer can't really determine what the best recognition quality actually is. It can make a guess based on what words are in a dictionary. It can make a guess based on the OCR engine's notion of how well it did. But the ultimate arbiter of how good character recognition is the person who reads the text afterwards. If you're reading a book that has a whole lot of proper names that aren't in the dictionary, things like that can have an effect on just how well that feature works. Nonetheless, that was a very exciting feature and a very popular feature. I think people really liked that one. Let's see. We added some additional scanner settings in the scanning settings dialog. They were primarily to deal with more complicated or more difficult scanners. One of the real trials in this kind of business is that the people who make scanners know how to make hardware. They often don't seem to know how to make software. And the Twain interfaces or the WIA interfaces that they create often have various problems. So we have features to work around those problems that are built into the scanner settings dialog, although we also added one that's a little more exciting, which is the ability to support scanners that scan both sides of the page at once. Those are called duplex scanners. They're fairly expensive for the most part, but we do have customers who have them and are very happy that we now support them. Another feature that people like a lot is verbosity. This is the ability to optimize or adjust the user interface to meet your particular needs. The verbosity feature is very much the result of suggestions and feedback from all sorts of users. And partly it's the result of the fact that we keep getting people who would find a particular message too long or a particular message unclear or who wanted a particular message at a spot where we didn't have a message, or who thought we should have a chime instead of a message. And so what the verbosity dialog allows you to do is it gives you a list of about 24 common events. And for each of those events, you can choose whether you want a message, a chime, or no system response at all. In addition, if you suggest that you want a message, you can type in the message. If you suggest that you want a chime, you can specify what sound file to use when we play the chime, i.e. what wave file. And so it gives you all sorts of ways to customize the system. And again, that was a popular feature. Something else that was new is for those of us who scan a lot of documents and find after a year or so that we no longer remember their name or exactly where we put them. So there is now a feature called Find and Open Files. And in a way, it's like the Windows search facility, except it is all built into the Kurzweil 1000. You use Find and Open in the File menu. It opens a dialog. You specify what words you wish to search for and what parent folder you want to begin the search in. You can also indicate whether we should find all the words or just some of the words, and whether those words are content, i.e. they're in the file or are part of the file name. So if you scan some recipes and you want to search for the word ratatouille, you could type in the word ratatouille and do a search and hopefully find the file. So that's a new feature. Oh, and by the way, if you find that you don't know how to spell the word ratatouille, the dictionary now has a wildcard feature. So you can go to the lookup dictionary dialog, type in RAT asterisk, and that will give you a list of all the words in the dictionary that start with RAT. So doing that, you can look up words that you really aren't entirely sure how to spell, and it takes asterisk as a wildcard indicating any number of characters or question mark indicating a single character. We also added a scientific calculator in version 8. This is one of our, what we call applications, which are small talking programs that are shipped with Kurzweil 1000 and which you can automatically launch from the Kurzweil 1000 with the file launch facility. And so it's a very powerful scientific calculator that allows you to do all sorts of things that I can't even begin to explain and in some circumstances may not be able to pronounce. We added or expanded the online functionality, which was very popular in version 7. For those of you who don't know about this, it gives you the ability to search online repositories of books or magazines. New in version 8 was the ability to search for magazines. Primarily that was done for NLS WebBraille, but we have added other sites since then. One of the ones we have added since then, by the way, is the TNAUK, so the UK talking newspaper site is now accessible and searchable within the Kurzweil 1000. Once you have searched and found articles or books that you are interested in, you can download those in the background and open them. Something that's not quite online searching, but is put in the same place because it's a similar user interface, is the ability to search the classic literature CD. That is a CD that is shipped with the product that is basically a collection of public domain books, literary classics, historical documents, and religious texts. There's an awful lot of material there, and we found that people had a difficult time finding what they wanted to find in that. So they can now search for those books within the online book features. There's also an online bookshelf feature. The online bookshelf feature, it's sort of the difference between going into a library and having to ask someone about a particular book that you're interested in, and going into a library and being able to go to a card catalog by call number and seeing for yourself every book that they have there by title or by author and looking among those books yourself. So that's available in the Kurzweil 1000, and it's a nice feature because it allows you to, instead of searching for something, it lets you go through a list of everything that a particular site has, either by author or by subject. I'm sorry, author or title. Subject I wish I could do. Right now I cannot do. The Kurzweil 1000 also has a new dictionary and thesaurus. The dictionary is the fourth edition of the American Heritage Dictionary. The thesaurus is Roget's thesaurus. We added some editing and navigation improvements. The ability, one of my favorites, is the ability to go to the last position you were at in a document. Basically, any time you do something that jumps, causes you to move significantly from one place to another, we quietly keep track of where you were. And in fact, we have a list of up to 20 character cursor positions that you were in for each open document. By pressing Control plus F5, you can go to the previous one. Press it again, and you'll go to the one before that. So if you, for example, do a search and you find yourself a long, long way from where you originally were in a document, and you want to get back there, that's a very quick way to get back there. Let's see, there's some things with preliminary pages, not terribly important. There are ways in which we allow you now to move forward and backward by unit while reading continuously, which is very useful if you want to browse through a document rather than read everything. So you can press F6 to move backward by unit, F7 to repeat the current unit, F8 to move forwards, and you can do this while you are reading continuously and keep on reading as you go along. There are some improvements to the browse mode in that you can now select first sentence, last sentence, or both while you are browsing, which is another way to skim a document, but it's a way without pressing keys constantly. And there's a few new settings to influence spell checking. audio file creation, which was a feature in version 7, which gave you the way to make MP3 files. Now in version 8 gives you the way to make WAV and MP3 files, and also gives you the way to do those sorts of things while doing something else on your computer. So it starts out a separate process that creates the WAV files, the MP3 files. It tends to be very obvious that this is happening because your computer will slow down somewhat. Nonetheless, you can continue doing other things while those files are made in the background. We added support in the file send to for other portable devices, mainly Book Courier and PacMate. We made some improvements to zip file support, some changes to folder properties. We added the ability to save to HTML. And in addition to create a table of contents when you save to HTML using the multi-level bookmark feature. Oh, a new pause for paragraph setting. And I guess I'll stop now because it does get a little long-winded after a while, but I would mention quickly that there's probably about 20 other things, and there will be some of your listeners who will say, oh, how could you possibly forget this? Because they will have their own favorites. But there's quite a lot when we do a new release, and that's an introduction to the ones for version 8.
That's quite a staggering list there, Steve. A lot of information there, particularly for people who are not familiar with Kurzweil to take in. So let's just let people give them some time to digest some of that. And you know, with the introduction of things like this, you know, multifunction calculator, the faxed features and the photocopying features and the virtual printer and the various encyclopedia type features and online magazines. I mean, it's really now, Kurzweil, it's not just a document reader anymore. It's almost an information center, it seems to me. And I'm just wondering, philosophically, how far does that go? Would you think eventually there'll be a web browser and an email client in there?
There certainly could be, although I've been really reluctant to move in that direction. The problem from my perspective with writing a web browser for the blind is that it's already been done, and it's done pretty well, and the people who do it make it available at a pretty reasonable price. And further, that one of the problems with the web, from my perspective, is that it's an extremely visual place. And even with all the tools in the world, blind access to the web is a little on the slow side. So I was really interested, for example, in things like that we've already done, like the online books and online magazines and a few other things that we'll talk about when we talk about version 9, that are ways of getting access to some of the resources that are on the web without writing something as open-ended and as difficult to use sometimes as a web browser. That isn't to say it isn't the direction we could go in. We could, but it's not something that we necessarily have to do. The email client is also, I guess, sort of a similar thing. And there we have, of course, the experience of one of our competitors who did add an email client to the product for one release and then found that they pulled it out, I think, two releases later. And I believe, I mean, I don't know why they did that, but I suspect one reason is the moment you make an email client in your product, you are going to have people who buy your product thinking that they now have access to email, which they've wanted for a long, long time, but who don't necessarily know that they also need, for example, an ISP, that there are other problems that they have to solve for themselves or get solved, and who, as a consequence, are going to call technical support and not necessarily be happy. I personally sort of thought that an email client was a guaranteed way to really, really increase the amount of people who call your customer support line. And then again, it is also the fact that there are very good email clients available at very reasonable prices, including free, that are quite accessible. So it's something that that doesn't strike me as something that has a really clear-cut problem yet.
So am I right in thinking that you really see the Kurzweil software as really being a portal, access to information, not a personal information manager as such, but more a portal to allow people to access literature and the media?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. And that is not to say that we won't branch off in all sorts of interesting directions in the future. You mentioned earlier that optical character recognition, which at one point was expensive and unusual, is now something that people often have on their computers without even knowing that they have it. It is something that comes with certain versions of Office. It certainly comes with scanners. We pretty much need to extend the kinds of things we support if we're going to continue to be in this business.
Do you want to elaborate on that last point?
Well, again, simply that one reason we make fairly frequent releases, and one reason that we put a lot of things in those releases, was a couple reasons. One is that we get a lot of feedback from what's really a pretty large installed base, and a very actively involved installed base. There are a lot of people who use our listserv, who send us email, who call us, who write us, and tell us that they love our product, but they'd really like it if we only did such and such. And many of those suggestions have been added to the product. I mean, we've come a long way, and many of our customers may be surprised to know, for example, that at one point we did not have a Windows user interface. It was just a keypad user interface. At one point, you could not edit within the Kurzweil 1000. You could simply read. And those sorts of features were added at the request of users. The editing one, I really didn't think about, oddly enough. It was one of our customers who said, you know, it's really annoying to come across an error and not be able to fix it. And eventually said, customer convinced me of that, and I added the feature. So we are very interested in our customers' requests, and we add things as we can. There is a concern that as you add things, you end up with a user interface that may be increasingly complex, and we never want to add things in such a way that it compromises the simplicity with which you can do basic things within the Kurzweil 1000. It should always be easy to put a page on the scanner, hit one button, scan it, and listen to what it says. And beyond that, for some people, everything else is gravy.
That's all from Main Menu for this week. We will return at the same time next week with part two of our interview with Stephen Baum from Kurzweil Educational Systems. In the meantime, don't forget Main Menu is your program, and if you have an idea of an item you'd like to produce or you'd like us to produce, then why not drop us a line? The email address is mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org. Until next time, I'm Dave Williams. Bye for now.